Welcome to Carrying Wayward, a supernatural podcast for fans who aren't ready to let go and newcomers to the series who are ready to jump in. I'm Drew Schulman.
And I'm Marie Vigouroux. In this episode, we're diving into Supernatural, Season 8, Episode 2, What's Up, Tiger Mommy? Let's get this show on the road. Before we start on the episode, I did want to remind you all that I will be at the Supernatural convention in New Jersey next month. And stay tuned because next week we're going to have something cool to talk about merch-wise.
This week, our Patreon and Ko-fi supporters got to hear us answer the question, share an anecdote about your mom on the supporter exclusive Impala Talk feed. You can go to carryingwayward.com to support us and claim your perks.
So what did you think?
This episode was wild. It's amazing because, like, underneath the, like, extravagant exterior of, like, Kevin's mom and this whole, like, extra layer of having her join them, it is an otherwise, like, very classic, like, the brothers on a mission, we're gonna do the thing, and then it doesn't really go as well as they normally do. Like, it really is a loss for them, which is, like, a not common occurrence, especially this early in a season. Like, I feel like you're gonna do your losses like in the middle as you're kind of like facing the bad guy, but this really feels like the final fight with Crowley is coming sooner than I anticipate it.
I really like this episode for so many reasons. What I'm hearing when you say like it feels like a very normal episode, I think it's because it grabs the spirit of Supernatural from earlier seasons, which is something that we've been talking about quite a bit throughout season 7 and now through season 8. And we'll talk about that because I absolutely agree. So we'll talk about that in story time. Before we move on to story time, do you want to give us a recap of the episode?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, Mjolnir.
The brothers and Kevin, they've realized what they got to do. They got to find the word of God so they can stop all the demons. They start their plan. But Kevin's all like, I'm worried of my mom, which is a very normal and human thing to do, especially for a young kid, regardless of that. He talks them into it, very much Dean kind of going with it, Sam kind of speaking like, okay, cool. They go, they realize all these weird things, that's demons for ya. They save her, and then she's all like, I'm coming with you. And they're all like, I guess we can't stop you? Okay, let's do this. They get their tattoos, which is the most adorable scene in this episode, let alone the season so far. After some really shady Dean threatening, we find the stone has been stolen from a locker and is now up for auction by Plutus and his betraying henchman, who I adore because he was a fantastic actor. And of course, Crowley's there. And Crowley ultimately gets away with it after possessing his mother, who is now left in this like weird like coma, half awake state, which is like new for us. And Kevin runs away with his mother, leaving the brothers with no word of God, Crowley in possession of the word of God, the two of them just on their own and not sure what to do next time.
This episode was written by Andrew Dabb and Daniel Laughlin, directed by John F. Showalter, and it originally aired, I'm going to be able to get it out properly, on October 10th, 2012. I do want to start the long game this week by saying that I completely forgot to say that we meet Amelia last week, which is incredibly funny to me for so many reasons, which we will dive into when we get back into Amelia a little bit more. We do meet this week Linda Tran, the MVP. We had seen her last season, but now this is a new actress playing her. She is going to have a storyline as of now.
Given the way this episode ended, I would not have been surprised if that was the end of her. And when we do eventually meet up with Kevin again, we learn that she's just like written off as like, oh, I left her with family. They're taking care of her. She's written out of the story, but alive.
I mean, realistically, I think it could have worked that way too, but the public loved her. Like, people loved her.
Genuinely, every line of dialogue she delivered and every scene she was in only made me love her more.
All right, so Linda and Kevin get tattoos, which is important in this particular storyline.
It does open up the reality of, like, the tattoo is as permanent as it is. It is skin. It can be removed, which is horrifying. Also the way they actually did it. Like, it wasn't like a, like, oh, ripped off or burnt off. It was like, let me hold a lighter to your arm and pin you to a wall for Lord knows how long that would probably take. I don't want to know. Don't answer that, anybody, please. I don't want to know the answer. But I imagine it's not quick.
I do want to highlight that when Dean imagines a world without demons, he dreams of, and I quote, sunshine and sandy beaches. That is all.
I cannot picture Dean on a beach. I mean, I can, but not canonically.
Well, you might be surprised at some point.
Always and never.
We meet Samandriel, who is currently using a Wiener Hut employee named Alfie as a vessel. Now, this is the same actor who played the boy in Bugs. Bugs, my beloved.
It will never leave you.
No, it will never leave me. And I love Samandriel. He does such a good job.
Like, the first angel I haven't disliked in a while. I really like kind of, like, the innocence he's going for. And, like, even just accepting, like, the... And you chose a Wiener Hut employee, and it's, like, not important. Like, move past it, please. I'm sorry. Like, I really love him. I want more of him. I'm excited.
Speaking of Samandriel, I also need to highlight this line of his, which is, I think too much heart was always Castiel's problem. Because we will be coming back to that at some point, for sure. Because hearts mean stuff on Supernatural.
That was very much one of those, making note of this line, that was very evident.
An excellent, excellent, excellent assessment of Castiel's character. Great job, Alfie. I love you. When Linda is asking if losing her soul is going to kill her, Sam replies, you'll just wish you were dead. Gave me major, like, oh, Sam vibes. He has firsthand experience in not having a soul, so, like, that line truly destroyed me.
It was said, and then I had, like, it took a second, like, wave to be like, oh, that hurts.
It's like the realization of what's actually happening on the screen. Oh! We find out that Sam is worthy of Mjolnir, which we'll talk about in story time. We also find out about a lot of what happened in Purgatory, which I will touch on in Critical Time mostly.
Again, flashbacks were good this week. They did not get on my nerves yet.
So week two, you're fine with the flashbacks. Okay, cool, cool, cool. On a scale of, oh, they're really interesting, to I want them to stop, you're still at the, oh, I find them interesting. I do want to mention the unhinged lines that are, I pray to you, Cass, every night, and Cass, buddy, I need you. Like, screaming begins again. That is all.
Going into this season, again, knowing what I know from season 6 and 7 and kind of the relationship between the queer energy between Dean and Cass, I feel like that's very much been, like, the can has been opened a lot more than in the past suddenly. Like, there is a lot more, like, leniency to, like, write it in, be blunt about it, because that is mega boyfriend energy. That is mega, I need you, I miss you, I love you energy, not just... Bro, what happened, bro?
And I also want to mention that the whole, like, nice peach fuzz line was not in the script. That was ad-libbed by Jensen Ackles, so we were blessed with a Jackals Jacting Joyce special right here.
Oh my god. That is a very, very choice line.
It's a Joyce, that's for sure. It's a Jacting Joyce. This week, our theme is value, and value comes from the Latin valere, which means to be strong, to be well, to be of value, or to be worth. There's this idea of, like, quantifying here. We're talking about the degree to which something is useful or esteemable or, like, is of value to somebody. I think that we see a lot of examples of that in this episode, and I'm really excited to dive into it.
I feel like last week, too, the theme was very, like, it was spot on for Sam and Dean and very, like, easy to read them through it. And this one, again, was, like, it, like, you sent the text, like, by the way, the theme is value, right as I was, like, literally watching the episode, because I texted you in all caps how much I love Linda. And then, like, the next three lines that came up, I was like, oh, very clearly why you chose this.
This one I did choose after watching, to be entirely honest, so it's not like I just, like, pulled it on my butt. No, no, no. Like, I was watching and I was paying attention specifically. And I have notes to show that I was kind of wondering which word to pick for this.
Shall we hear about Sam?
Sam is not in the good graces of Dean right now, and understandably so, right? Like, given what we talked about last week. So I feel like in this episode, he really tries to make himself small. Like, he lets Dean make a lot of the decisions that they would usually make together, or at least, like, he gives Dean the final say on those things. I'm thinking specifically about, like, going to see Linda in the first place and then taking her with them. In both of these cases, it's really Dean that has to be convinced, right? Like, Sam completely defers to him. And what I would like to read here is that Sam values the relationship with his brother more than he does making decisions, very simply. Like, he knows that Dean needs to feel in control right now for Dean's own reasons that seem pretty obvious. And so he lets him because he values Dean and he values their sibling bond.
I feel like Sam acted in a very similar way after the initial demon blood blowout. He sort of, like, shrinks emotionally and mentally, not physically.
Still a tall bean.
Yeah, and I feel like twice we've seen this behavior in Sam, and it shows that he knows he's upset Dean and needs to, like, make amends to him. And he does that by making Dean, like, the center of everything. Not in, like a greedy way, but just in the, like, centering him in his actions or lack thereof in allowing Dean to take the reins. And I think, you know, if we had a simple, like, time to, like, deep dive into this now, like, this I consider a repeated behavior, we could probably draw some conclusions based on how John acted and made Sam feel small, like the little one. You know, it's an obvious line to draw on my little red thread board of, like, the shit John has done.
I would actually love to hear more of that, Drew. Like, I find that to be pretty interesting. So if you have more to say, I'd love to hear it.
I feel like most of the interactions we've seen with John have been the way that Dean is treated. And I think the problem there is because Dean is the one that he can respond to. Sam feels within the group of the three like he's small and othered and, like, put aside. He's almost doing the reverse of that while doing the same thing to himself. Instead of, you know, like, putting the blame on Dean, he is making Dean stand out and be seen and be heard and be, like, valued, which is in turn doing what John would have done to him, which is making him feel small and diminished. It's a learned behavior, unfortunately, that he thinks is the right way to go, because ultimately, when John was the one coming back and yelling at Dean and making Sam feel small and unwanted, it was John being, I'm the boss, I'm in charge, I'm in control, I'm the leader. He's basically reversing that by giving it to Dean instead of Dean taking it from him.
Thanks for sharing. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
I also find that Sam gives Dean a lot of leeway in terms of, like, pulling a knife on the prisoner that they're interrogating in that prison, right? Or in that jail. I can't remember exactly where they are. But he can immediately see that Dean is just not in his right mind at the moment. And he's still, like, very jumpy, to say the least, from purgatory. Like, he doesn't know the whole extent of it yet, but he can tell that shit went down. And the last time that we saw this was when Dean came back from hell, actually. And only then, at the time, Sam was, like, pestering him with questions and, like, telling him that he had to talk about it, which, like, as we know, just doesn't work for Dean. Like, he needs time to process. And now, since then, Sam has done a lot of growing up, right? We talked a lot about that in season 7. I just kind of want us to take a step back and realize that Sam went from being, like, a 22-year-old in season 1 to now being a 30-year-old. Like, that is a lot of life that has been lived in those 8 years, right? Especially for the Winchester brothers. Except maybe in terms of, like, relationships, because the only relationships that they truly have are the ones that they have with each other and with very few people. But I do think that this ties back to, like, value in a way that, like, Sam understands that the way that he deals with things is not the way that Dean does. Like, he's learned to appreciate that there are different ways of approaching situations and that he needs to give Dean his time to process. Like, he values Dean's process more than he did before, I think.
There was an initial shock for me and surprise at Sam initially, but then, it turned around and I surprised myself, because you're right. These actions, again, a representation of a somewhat similar time for Dean coming back from a terrible place, literally, and how he handled himself moving forward. And while I was a bit taken aback by how little Sam tried to intervene or stop the whole, like, knife-threatening situation, like, it really was, like, weirdly out of character. Like, I expected Sam to, like, tackle Dean to the ground almost, like, you know, you're going too far. But in retrospect, I understand it. Like, one, the trust in his brother that has grown even more over these last few years to not go too far, as he's seen Dean has been able to restrain himself before, but also an understanding that Dean's been through a lot and is not really in a space right now to confront that. And two, to let him heal in his own ways and work out his own feelings for himself. I don't love that those involve threatening a man with a knife in a jail cell, but the fact that Sam values his brother enough to trust him to not go too far or not push himself to a point of no return, I think shows a lot of value in each other, or specifically Sam and Dean.
I hadn't thought also about the fact that, like, he actually trusted him not to go too far. Although, to me, that was too far. But anyway, like, you know, for their standards in story. Now, obviously, we can't just not talk about this, right? Like, we've been, like, bubbling with all of it. Sam is able to wield Mjolnir. And it's actually really funny because I just watched Age of Ultron not too long ago. And there's that scene where Steve and Tony try to lift Mjolnir and Tony can't, but Steve is, like, able to move it, like, just a bit. And, like, I just think it's awesome that Sam is worthy of it. I don't know why this is making me feel so warm and fuzzy. I really think it's because for so long after season four, Sam felt so unworthy of so many things. And it's just, like, really nice to see him come into his own in terms of, like, confidence and self-love and valuing himself.
It's genuinely cute, and I know I've attempted to overanalyze this, and I want to throw that away and not ruin this, because I do also get that warm fuzzies from it too, and I think it's a sign of the future for Sam. I'm hoping I'm not putting my foot in my mouth here when I say this, that, like, he is ultimately a being of good, despite all of his flaws and mistakes and the things that may have made him value himself less at some point. He is ultimately a force of good in this world and worthy of love and respect and care in himself and from others because he is good.
I love that. And I think that it's really important to remember that, like, we are worthy of love even when we make mistakes, because it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
Oh, I know. You want to get us on Dean?
Before we get into Dean, I have a personal disclaimer that I need to put out there, because I find it really difficult to deal with Dean when he is in this kind of mental state. Not because I don't recognize that he's actively in trauma brain mode, not because I'm, like, not understanding of what he's going through, but because of my own relationship of how I am when I am in trauma brain mode. I just want to scream at him, like, to stop acting this way, because he's showing me a mirror of myself that's highlighting the parts of myself that I do not like. I'm going to ask listeners to please keep that in mind as we navigate this season, but also future seasons when Dean is, like, in a similar state. I'm going to try to navigate this with as much self-awareness as I possibly can, but like I said, I am only human, and so I will inevitably make mistakes and not be perfect about it all.
I think allowing yourself to see yourself in a character and recognizing that this is ultimately very powerful of a connection, I think this will only make your analysis more in-depth and meaningful and special. So thank you for being vulnerable and open about this and honest.
The whole reason why I want to do this is because it's not that I see myself in Dean and so I'm like, oh, but I really get it. It's like, shut the fuck up. Stop doing what you're doing. I'm hard on him. And so people don't generally respond very well to people being hard on Dean, which is why I'm, like, kind of just putting that out there, that this has more to do with my own relationship with trauma brain and my behavior when I'm in that state than it has to do with Dean per se. Dean is not having a good time. And that's really reflected, like, in the things that he does, but also narratively through some of the things that, like, happen that are not necessarily inherently about Dean, but that I think are written to speak about what Dean is going through. And as much as we talked about Sam being aware of his own worth, or becoming aware of his own worth, Dean is just not at the moment. And you can really see that at the end when Sam and Dean are talking and Sam asks Dean if he was really going to kill Linda. And Dean replies, yeah, I wish I had. Which is just such a departure from where Dean was in season 3 in Jess and Bello, where people were wanting to kill the Virgin, right, to get out of the police station alive. It was a whole thing, right? It wasn't just like, let's just kill a Virgin for fun. But Dean was the only one who dissented, and he dissented very loudly about that. And at the time, we had talked about how Sam valued the ends more than the means, and Dean valued, like, the means more than the ends. And now we're basically in a reverse situation, where Dean says that he values killing Crowley more than he values Linda's life.
Dean excuses his actions in favor of seeing a better tomorrow for the world, and as you said, Sam seemingly more is concerned about the harm he or they may cause on the way to said ending, and Sam would rather save one person here, and know he did good by them, even if it might not be the best move moving forward, kind of like giving up hunting to care for a dog he hit with his car. Dean, on the other hand, says it pretty clearly here. What he does know is moot as it all counts towards saving everyone else. Logic clearly dictates that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
To me, it really begs the question of, like, can we trust what Dean is saying? Because we know that he's pretty famous for saying things that he doesn't always mean, and that the truth can actually be found more in his actions than in his words. And, like, if we look at his actions in this episode, he is actually constantly protecting Linda from harm. Like, first, he doesn't want to go see her to protect her from the demons that could be following them. Then he doesn't want to take her with them again to protect her from demons. And then he gets real mad when the jerk at the pawn shop calls her a mail order bride. And when Crowley says that he wants to defile her corpse. Like, he gets really mad in those instances, like, more mad than Kevin, actually. Are those really the actions of somebody who wishes they had killed this person? You tell me. I personally don't think so. And he does say during the conversation with Sam, like, what's one more nightmare? And, like, we've talked about Dean having nightmares before, and we know that he usually has nightmares about things that he regrets doing. So again, does he really wish that he had killed Linda? I don't think so.
The big takeaway from this is the words do not reflect the actions. He believes that he did the wrong thing by letting her go. And it's just, it's words. It's much easier to say something than to do something. I'm fully convinced that he had, even with the interruption, every chance to kill Linda / Crowley. And he didn't. Here was his chance to get rid of the biggest bad still in the game, but he couldn't do it. He says he wishes he had done it, not that he wished he could have. Deep down, he knows it would be wrong to hurt someone like Kevin by taking their mother or, you know, killing someone innocent that he's connected with.
I just want to say that it would be wrong to kill Linda because it is wrong to kill Linda, not because of her relationship with Kevin.
That's what I was saying. I was saying both. It's wrong to hurt Kevin, but also wrong to hurt someone that he has grown connected to, an innocent person. And especially you add the layer, the Dean layer of, he let her join them on this mission and assumed further responsibility for her safety. He knew he would not be able to live with that choice. And this, to me, is the shining light inside of Dean, that even after whatever craziness ensued in Purgatory, our boy is still good deep down and he values human life.
And it's definitely not something that he wants to show. But to come back to our theme conversation about value, like, there's one point where Crowley says the Winchesters, well, they have a habit of using people up and watching them die bloody. And this is what I mean when I mentioned earlier that, like, some stuff happens narratively that's not really about Dean, but it's actually about Dean because who is this really about if not Cass? Like, poor Cass, who Dean feels super responsible for leaving in Purgatory. And I would really argue here that everything that happens now and then in the next few episodes is because Dean is, one, in trauma brain mode, and two, grieving Cass. Now, we've seen how he is when he's in trauma brain mode, and I'm thinking specifically about when he's coming back from hell. And we've also seen him how he is, anyway, when he's grieving Cass last season. And now he's got both of these things happening at once. So of course he's seeing, like, the worst possible interpretation of what Crowley's saying, right? Like, he doesn't have the wherewithal to be like, this is not who I am. He just like internalizes it because it fits the narrative that he's telling himself about himself at the moment, that he's not worthy, that he failed Cass, and that nothing matters.
Like, this is the nastiest trick that Crowley plays on them. Like, he feeds into Dean's current trauma by making a statement that Dean interprets as being not just him now, but him always, by making Dean reflect on himself through this darker lens, that he's able to start seeing a pattern in himself of using people as Crowley suggested. The deviously evil part of this is that in the wrong context, this can be seen as true. But like you and I both know, and the reality is, we know that those lost along the way were never used up by them, as Crowley put it, but rather unfortunate circumstances that for the most part, these people around them understood and were willing to take on the risk of, not for them, but for the belief that what they were doing is right. But Dean doesn't see it now. He doesn't see that people valued them and trusted them and made the choice to follow them. He's truly seeing it in this very dark way. And unfortunately, so is Kevin.
Dean is very much like in this moment. And I mean, Kevin, I can understand given what happened with Sam, right? Like given the fact that like he was basically abandoned by Sam, I understand that he doesn't trust the Winchesters. We're kind of back to Dean being like, a leaf fell down. I am responsible for it. You know, like where things that have absolutely nothing to do with him are now his responsibility. Like that is the shame that's like crawling back in for him. I would like to talk a little bit about the relationship between Dean, Benny, and Cass. Because we know that Dean went into purgatory with Cass after the two had finally made up, right? After being like on the rocks for quite some time. And then last episode, I mentioned that I felt like Dean and Benny not talking or basically breaking up their relationship felt like a very civilized breakup. And you disagreed with that, which I found incredibly surprising. But, you know, I guess nobody's perfect. So I was trying to visualize that relationship between, you know, Dean, Cass, and Benny when I was taking my notes, and I found myself drawing a triangle where you've got Cass, who's desperately trying to protect Dean, even if it means, like, not being around him, right? We find out that he bolted specifically to keep the Leviathan away from Dean. Then you've got Dean, who's, like, making excuses for Cass at first, or at least I should say, like, assuming positive intent, where he's like, you know, like, oh, he must have gotten jumped and he left, he's running, he's been trying to find me, like just the same way that he used to do with his dad, which I found really, really, really heartbreaking. But he only does with people he loves. And then he also says at the end of that conversation, like, I'm not leaving here without you. So there's this like push and pull where Dean and Cass like want the same thing, which is to protect each other. But again, they go about it completely differently. And then you've got Benny, who just wants Dean to know the truth about why Cass left him. And I gotta say that I, for one, am just so excited to see where this relationship triangle takes us.
I will say, with this episode's flashbacks, which I still enjoyed a little bit, I definitely see it more, and I even feel like there's bits of Benny, and like, again, sure, he's a... We confirm he's a vampire, right? Like,
oh, totally.
The way he kind of, like, asks questions and forces the conversation between Cass and Dean a little bit, like, you know, stirring the pot a little bit as if he wants things to end so he can have his new boyfriend. It made me a little mad at Benny, but a lot more understanding of the triangle of which you speak.
I was also mad at Benny for doing that, but then, like, when I heard the answer, I was like, oh my god, he was just trying to protect him. And you can tell that Benny is, like, looking down, like, that freaking backfired on him. And he's like, damn it. Like, he actually cares about him. This week, we have a message from Muriel. And before we listen to it, we want to remind you to send us a 3-minute voicemail. To respond to anything we discussed today or to ask us a question, you can use the recording app on your phone and email us the recording at carryingwayward@gmail.com.
Muriel writes, hi, I sent a voicemail in earlier, but I realized that it was way too long and I didn't really get my point, so I was hoping that I could just write it out. Whenever someone talks about Sam's side of Dean's demon deal in season 3, it's always, but Sam will go back to hell. Unless I miss something, I have never known Sam in season 2 dying and going to hell. Obviously, they weren't really buddy-buddy with the angels at the time, but they had to have known something about heaven or some other afterlife that wasn't pure torture, i.e. hell. So, people assume Sam went to hell, which for me was kind of weird. In later seasons, we start to see Sam and Dean become more questionable on morals and choices as time goes on. But in season 2, the worst thing Sam had done was hunting, until we get to the demon blood, which seems to be like a end-all, damn-all situation. Like, perfect moral citizen. Oh, you have demons? Sorry, buddy, you gotta go. Whenever someone like Sam dies, my point is that in later seasons, we learn about the empty, and it's essentially the afterlife for angels and demons. We also learn that if you are only partly angel, you are probably going to be there too when you die. So what stops us from making the assumption that someone who is half demon like Jesse, or partly demon like Sam, couldn't go to the empty? This would explain Sam never having memories of hell from his death in season 2, and is a decent explanation to his morally gray persona due to hunting. My question is, what are your thoughts on this? And how do you think him potentially seeing the empty might have affected his decision in later seasons? I love your podcast, and it's so fun to listen to. I hope you have a great day and carry on having a fun time, Muriel.
Thank you so much, Muriel, for this lovely question. First of all, I'm just going to put it out there that Drew doesn't know what the empty is, so he's probably not going to be able to answer that question, which is fine. What I will say about that, I just don't understand the whole back to hell. There's nothing that says that when Sam died in season, like at the end of season 2, right? That's what happens. I never thought that he would have gone to hell, because actually in the episode where the boys are killed by other hunters, they go to heaven, right? And that's after Sam has drank all of that demon blood. So, I mean, I think canonically, if Sam died at the end of season 2, well, if, you know, when he died at the end of season 2, he would have gone to heaven. I don't really understand why people would say that he would have been going to hell. Although, I mean, I'm open to hearing any thought about that. I will also say that in that episode, which is, oh my goodness, I cannot remember the title of it, but it's the one where they go to heaven, and then they do say in that episode that every time that they've died, the angels erased their memories, and that's both brothers, right? So that's why they don't have any memories. So I don't know. I feel like those questions are answered pretty easily directly from the text. Would the empty have affected anything else? I'm not sure because he doesn't remember it, right? So, but I just don't think that that's something that would have happened, right? In the kind of like world building that I understand at this point. I hope that answers your question, Muriel. Again, thank you.
As Mary put it, I have no idea what the empty is, although I'm now very excited because that means new lore, especially afterlife-related lore, I love. And I'll be curious to know how much is pulled from other text versus totally made up by the show, because I don't have any context for it outside of the show at this point. I think I kind of like started formulating a theory as you were talking, and as you did, I was like, oh no, wait, you solved this, it makes perfect sense. But I'm still going to spout my theory that any and all deaths prior to season 5's finale, that there was some chuck fuckery. That God was pulling the strings and playing some games to keep things going. Like, them not just getting to heaven, but also being memory wiped and sent back was very much like a God says do this. Like, you know, it's like a little memo pad. Like, you know, like, oh, subsection 4-8-B, if Winchester's white mind send back. Again, God. His rules, not mine. So that's my personal headcanon until otherwise, that Chuck left some really bizarre rules for angels, and angels are sticklers for rules in every form of media I know, especially here.
So, Drew, do you want to tell us a little bit, now that we've talked about this episode, about your reflection and call to action?
I think this is one of those ones where I've probably touched on it before, because it's a point they do bring up quite frequently in the show. Because I know I've said the expression many times, seeing the forest for the trees. I want to reflect on the idea that there are times that you can make a decision where, you know, I know it's not the best decision, but it's what I need right now, and I may have to suffer for it later. a very good example is when I'm having, I'll just be very blunt, not the best night and I need comfort food and I know I'm not going to feel well tomorrow morning and my tummy's going to hurt, but sometimes I'm willing to take that risk because I know how small it is. But the opposite is true. It's also worth evaluating those moments. Like, do I really need this? Is it worth the suffering later? So my reflection is to think a bit more about my actions before I take them and judge whether the outcome is worth the choices I make.
Thank you for sharing that.
And you, Mary, your calls to action and reflections this week?
Well, I found that this episode really hints at, like, how the way we value ourselves impacts our relationships with others. And I know that that's true only to varying degrees, right? Depending on a lot of the cases, you know, obviously, like, this isn't truth for all. But it is true in the case of Sam and Dean in this episode. And it's honestly making me feel called to think about that exact thing in my own life, right? Like, how my own perception of my worth is impacting my relationships with the people that I love.
This was Carrying Wayward, a Supernatural podcast produced by Rochelle Castellano, hosted by Mary Vigouroux and myself, Drew Schulman. Thank you to everyone supporting us on Ko-fi or Patreon, especially our Bunker supporters, Elle, Jeremiah Thomas, and Simone. We'd also like to thank Jake Lionheart for our music, and Jacqueline Tucci for additional sound editing. Head over to carryingwayward.com to become a patron or a Ko-fi subscriber, and for our merch store and socials. And write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Carry on, our wayward friends!